source from others. We all know someone who incessantly posts selfies on social media. They need likes, comments, and shares to feel good about themselves. Giving us purpose. Researcher Dan P. McAdams at Northwestern University studied our self-narratives, the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves. He found that knowing what we value can impart a sense of purpose on our life and work. Hoarders might tell themselves that having a home full of goods is absolutely necessary to having a secure adult life. Nurses might tell themselves that taking care of others is part of their personal mission to give service. Value extraction and identification is hard work. It's a journey that people spend years on. This exercise will help get you thinking about the values that drive you. Listen to each of the following statements and give each a numerical rating. 0, for this does not describe me at all. 1, for this describes me somewhat. 2, for this describes me well. The 3 statements for love are, it's important to me to feel accepted. It's important to me to be liked by others. It's important to me to feel like I belong. The 3 statements for service are, it's important to feel the people in my life support me. It makes me feel special when someone does a favor for me. It's important to me to feel cared for. The 3 statements for status are, it makes me feel great when someone praises me. I like to be in charge. It's important for me to feel respected by others. The 3 statements for money are, it is important to me to be financially stable. I do my job mostly for the money. I think you have to have money to be completely happy. The 3 statements for goods are, I like to collect things. I often buy and give gifts. I can think of many objects in my home that have emotional meaning. The 3 statements for information are, I like to be in the know. I like to give advice. I enjoy teaching and learning. Which section had the most points? This could be your primary or possibly secondary value. The next exercise is designed to tell if you have a different primary value for each area of your life, social, professional, and romantic. Listen to the following prompts and put down the first answers that pop into your head. This is a free-flowing exercise to get you to tap into your values. There are no right or wrong answers. Professional primary value. What gives you a sense of purpose at work? What do you hope to get from the work you do? During the workday, I feel most worthy when? Fill in the blank. Your professional primary value might be social primary value. What is your favorite thing about being with your closest friends? What would you add to your social interactions to make them even better? When I am with my close friends, I feel most content when? Fill in the blank. Your social primary value might be romantic primary value. If you had to describe the best part of your relationship or ideal relationship, what would it be? What is the greatest gift your partner or dream partner could give you, tell you, or do for you? When you are with your partner, you feel most worthy when? Fill in the blank. Your romantic primary value might be, my professional primary value is information. I'm constantly teaching and reading every book, blog, and study I can get my hands on. My social and romantic primary value is love. I did not feel very liked or accepted growing up and never had a great group of friends in school. As an adult, I am incredibly lucky. I finally have a wonderfully supportive partner and loving friend group. But I still consistently try to give love and take love with these important people. Tapping into your values is one of the most powerful things you can know about yourself and the people around you. Why? Knowing your primary value is the key to contentment. Want to know why you're in a funk? Your primary value isn't being met. Want to know why a relationship isn't working for you? It's probably a value misalignment. Want to understand why you made a poor choice? Your primary value was driving you in a different direction. Many of my students say that decoding their own matrix was just as powerful as learning how to decode others. Our primary value is at the heart of who we are, the choices we make, and what drives us. Number 2, them. Here's a nice, fat human behavior truth for you. Most people's choices make sense to them. When they don't make sense to you, it's usually because you're being driven by a different primary value. Knowing primary value differences with the people in your life can help explain 1, why some people drive you absolutely crazy. 2, most relationship misunderstandings, 3, unpredictable choices and behavior from the people you care about. Do you need to motivate someone at work? Tap into what they value. Do you need to understand a partner's baffling choice? Figure out how it met their value needs. Want to know what gets someone up in the morning? Decode their primary value. Killer social skills require seeing the world through someone else's lens besides your own. Appeal to someone by focusing on what they value, not what you value. Be warned, I think uncovering someone's value language is the most difficult layer of the matrix. I use 3 tactics. 1. Complaints and brags. Does someone complain about not being paid enough at work? Money. Not being recognized for an achievement? Status. Not having a nice enough car? Goods. Or do they brag about how they took care of a sick parent? Service. How much the new boss likes them? Love. How much they know about the new corporate partner? Information. We're usually proud of obtaining our primary resource and upset about not having enough of it. This comes out in boasts, grumbles, and brags. 2. Nonverbal cues. Body language can also help you figure out if you are tapping into or refusing someone's primary value. Think of our good friend Mario. When he gets a fire flower or super mushroom, he jumps into the air, gets bigger, or runs faster. But when he hits a Koopa shell or a Goomba, he shrinks or loses a life. It's the same in real life, minus the overalls and mustache. When someone gets a primary value met, they are delighted. Watch for genuine happiness microexpressions, leans, nods, and winner body language. When someone does not get their primary value met, they show disgust, anger, contempt, or defeated body language. 3, behavioral cues. Once you start looking for it, someone's behavior can tell you a lot about needs they are trying to fill. Here's how this might look in the workplace. Colleague A always stays late to suck up to the boss. You can tell they're constantly looking for praise and more responsibility. Their primary value might be status. Colleague B leaves promptly every day at 5 p.m., but always gets their projects done in time for the raise review. They are the first to ask about your year-end bonuses. Their primary value might be money. Colleague C is an office butterfly, making friends with colleagues and leaving supportive notes on people's desks. Their primary value might be love. Colleague D always remembers people's birthdays, loves to plan office parties, and always organizes the corporate softball team. Their primary value might be service. Colleague E desperately wants the corner office and the best parking space in the lot. They love all the corporate perks and never forget to bring everyone souvenirs from vacations. Their primary value might be goods. Colleague F is a bit of an office gossip, so they always know what's going on behind the scenes. They also play golf with all the partners. Their primary value might be information. 4, worries. What keeps someone up at night? What do they stress out about? This can clue you into their primary value. Do you have a friend who is constantly moaning about feeling out of the loop? Her primary value might be information. Do you have a colleague who freaks out over people's titles and is always stressing about who will get the next promotion? His primary value might be status. Listen to the kinds of things someone worries about. Ask them what they worry about or their biggest worries in their life. Match it with a primary value. These can be hard to pick up on at first, but analyzing someone's past behavior can help point you in the right direction toward their primary value. Special note, I love the direct approach, but primary values are hard to talk about honestly. Most people who are driven by money are ashamed to admit it, even though this is a legit and necessary resource. Others feel embarrassed to say that they need to be liked or please people. Be aware that what someone says about their value language might not match the way they actually behave. 3, us. Once you think you know someone's primary value language, what do you do with that information? First, your predictions about their future behavior and choices will improve. This is extremely helpful when trying to decide how a colleague will perform on a new project, or if someone would be a good potential romantic partner. Second, you can use it to motivate the people in your life. Want to encourage your child to do more chores? More allowance might not be the best option. Want to impress your boss? Support their primary value, not yours, with the behavior they will appreciate. Want to incentivize your teammate to do better? Give more of what they value and take less of what matters most to them. Lastly, you can adopt a primary value to help people feel worthy. I think the greatest gift we can give our fellow human beings is to meet their resource needs. If I can give someone more of their primary value, I always do. No act of kindness, no matter how small, is ever wasted. Aesop. Let's break down each primary value and see how it can be used to provide worth. Primary value, love. They feel worthy when they are included, they feel liked, or someone appreciates them. Can you think of an example person whose primary value might be love? Primary value, service. They feel worthy when they don't have to ask for help, someone is assisting them with tasks or chores, someone does a favor for them. Can you think of an example person who might have service as their primary value? Primary value, status. They feel worthy when they are praised, they are given power or credit, their accomplishments are recognized. Can you think of an example person who might have the primary value of status? Primary value, money. They feel worthy when they have a full bank account, they can afford what they desire, they are earning money. Can you think of an example person who might have the primary value of money? Primary value, goods. They feel worthy when they have a comfortable home or office, they have lots of assets, they are surrounded by tokens or objects from their past. Can you think of an example person who might have goods as their primary value? Primary value, information. They feel worthy when they are in the know. They are told information first. They are asked to give their opinion. Can you think of an example person whose primary value might be information? The best way to harness the power of primary values is to give the right resource right away. For example, one of my good friends, John Boylston, ran for state representative in Oregon. He reached out to a mutual friend of ours, Matthew Scott, about a campaign coordinator opening. Thank you to both of them for letting me use this example. John wanted Matt's help, but was also hoping to make it a win-win interaction. I have a hunch John's professional primary value is service. He needed help with coordinating his entire campaign, calling donors, making flyers, knocking on doors, and answering phones. Before reaching out to Matt, John had to figure out Matt's primary value. Was Matt's primary value money? Would he want to get paid hourly? Was it status? Did Matt want to be listed on his website and campaign materials? Was it information? Would Matt want to get an insider's view into politics? After talking to a few friends in our circle, John found out that Matt had been wanting to get experience running a political campaign. Guessing that Matt's primary value was information, here's how John reached out via email, edited slightly for length. Hi, Matt. I heard that you were thinking about getting more involved in politics and potentially helping out on a campaign. Is that right? If so, I think you'd be an awesome fit for a project that I'm working on. This spring, I'm going to run for state representative for House District 26. When I run, I will need a good campaign team around me. I have already gathered a team of professional consultants, fundraisers, a data manager, and compliance and accounting individuals. What I really need, though, is someone who can be director of voter contact and volunteer manager. This is more than the entry-level volunteer position, and I think it could be a chance for you to get inside a campaign and really see how campaigns work, while also getting to make decisions, be creative, and do more than stuff envelopes, though we will have to pitch in on that stuff from time to time. I would be able to guide you through this, and we have an awesome team coming together who will help as well, so we will have tons of support for you, but I need someone who can be the engine for the campaign when it comes to making sure that we're actually talking with voters. As I was setting up my team, you were the first person I thought of for this job, and I think you would be awesome at it. John. Later, I learned that Matt was ecstatic to get this email from John. It was exactly what he'd been wanting. He replied right away. I'd absolutely love to help out in any way, shape, or form, and this sounds like something that I'd be very interested in for sure. I believe my weekends and nights are usually fairly calm, with the exception of I'm out at a trade show, so those times would work great for me. Thank you so much for thinking of me for this position, and I'd love to help out. When would be a good time for you to meet so we could talk through everything? Once again, thank you so much. To put this in perspective, Matt thanked John for asking him to work for free. At first glance, this seems counterintuitive. But if you know that Matt's primary value is information, it makes sense. Matt wanted to know more about running a campaign and was happy to join for an insider's look. This email was the start of a powerful working relationship because both men had their primary values being met. Special note, some of my students have found the need to occasionally add a situational value. This is when someone's primary value is different in a specific situation. For example, You might know that a colleague's primary value is money. However, you notice that projects where he takes the lead, he craves praise, recognition, and likes to claim credit, a situational value of status. The hunt for the heart. One of Boyd Vardy's biggest challenges arrived when a king decided to visit Londolozi. We've had our fair share of visiting celebrities, dignitaries, and politicians, but handling this royal entourage would require an unprecedented level of coordination, recalled Vardy. Not only did major logistics have to be taken care of, like extending a small runway to accommodate royal jets, but Vardy had to figure out what would make His Highness's experience special. Luckily, Vardy and his team got their clue right away. Goods seemed paramount to the king and his entourage. By talking to the king's staff, Vardy learned that the princesses enjoyed shopping. Our small gift shop had to be hugely overstocked so that the royal retinue of 20 women accompanying the king could discover fresh merchandise should they choose to shop once, twice, or three times a day. It's good to be a princess. The Vardy team flew in the king's Clarins face wash, his favorite vibrating workout machine, and papaya hand lotion. By the day of the king's arrival, Londolozi had been totally customized to his primary value. Aside from the natural beauty of their surroundings, this basic human insight is how Boyd Vardy and his family have turned Londolozi into a world-renowned resort. Vardy taps into primary values every day, with every person he meets, whether a safari guide, front desk concierge, or cook. He can quickly discern whether someone is on safari for the luxury experience, service, the all-inclusive five-star dining, goods, or a sense of oneness with nature, love. At the end of the day, Boyd is hunting for heart. He is searching for ways to bring meaning to the people who come to Londolozi. Your goal as a hacker is to do the same thing. Hunt for people's values, hunt to give them meaning, hunt for heart. Challenges. 1. Think of the 5 most important people in your life. What are their primary values? 2. Identify your riser's primary value. How can you better serve them? Bonus. Do the primary values exercise with your partner or best friend. What do they think drives you? Chapter review. Interactions are about transferring resources to each other. There are 6 categories of resources that we give and take with each other. We are driven by one main category, also known as your primary value. Each of us has a primary value that drives our behaviors, actions, and decisions. Hacking into someone's primary value is the final step to decoding them. Understand how you give and take resources. Know what your primary value is. Tap into the value layer of the matrix to know what drives people. Fill in the blank. My biggest takeaway in this chapter is... Part 3. The first 5 days. How do you turn casual acquaintances into lifelong friends? How do you make it easier to have the talk and make it official with the person you are dating? In part 1 of this book, you learned how to capture attention in the first 5 minutes. In part 2, you figured out how to capture understanding by learning how to speed read people's behavior and personality. In this final section, you'll master the art of leveling up your relationships. You already know how to make a killer first impression and analyze an inscrutable personality. Here's how to increase your influence, how to turn teammates into partners, clients into raving fans, and good friends into best friends. Chapter 10. Connect. How to speak so people listen. On May 18th, 1926, Amy Semple McPherson went missing. The day started off quite normally. McPherson and her secretary went for a swim near Venice Beach. Only a few minutes after diving into the water, McPherson disappeared. Searchers combed the nearby beaches. The city of Los Angeles went on high alert. Nothing. Then something odd happened. All over the country, people began reporting sightings of McPherson. Impossible sightings. Several would come in on the same day, thousands of miles apart. The police received ransom notes from a variety of sources. No one could find McPherson, yet everyone could find her. And then, a month after her disappearance, McPherson emerged unharmed from the Mexican desert, claiming she had been kidnapped and held hostage in a shack. The media was quick to point out that some aspects of McPherson's story did not add up. How did she get to Mexico? Why was she unharmed? Who kidnapped her? The public was enthralled. When she arrived in Los Angeles, over 30,000 people greeted her as a hero at the train station. McPherson fanned the flames of fame and funneled her new followers into the Angelus Temple, a church that still runs in Los Angeles today. At one point, 10% of Los Angelinos were members at McPherson's temple. "And that's why I want to fake my own kidnapping and start a cult," said Nicole Payone. The comedian is standing on top of a double-decker bus outside the Angelus Temple, speaking to a rapt group of tourists. The Angelus Temple is only one of many bizarre and hilarious stops on Payone's alternative comedy show, The Last Show I Do Before I Go on Medication. The concept behind the tour is personal, telling of her life in Los Angeles, the breakups, the walks of shame, the drunken stumblings. At one point during the show, Payone pulls the giant bus up in front of her ex-girlfriend's house and leads the entire bus in singing a rendition of Adele's song, Hello, as loud as possible. "Occasionally, my ex pops her head out of a window and sings with us. It depends on what kind of mood she's in," explained Payone. In between stops, Payone ducks tree branches, gives quirky tidbits about Hollywood murders, and points out hidden hangouts. At a particularly long red light, Payone encourages riders to get out your phones, post a picture of me on your Instagram, and then hook me up with your most successful friend. After her 14th tour or so, she figured out which blocks to avoid and how to effectively catcall pedestrians. Payone never imagined her tour would become a local Hollywood highlight, that she would have a waitlist for shows, or that she'd be approached by TV executives about turning her bus tour into a series. She'd originally assumed the show would be a one-time thing. "My life was failing. I had no money, no job, and my girlfriend and I had just broken up," she explained. So she turned comedy into her therapist and used the bus as her exposure therapy. "Her very first show was a terrifying experience. I basically screamed at everyone for an hour and a half and felt like throwing up every time we got to a new location. But she forced herself to be honest. Stories of botched dates, relationship shenanigans, and ridiculous encounters poured out. I was sharing my deepest secrets and shameful moments. It was both frightening and freeing," said Payone. The next day, while Payone was dealing with what she calls her vulnerability hangover, people began to talk about the show, and especially about Payone's raw humor and openness. Since then, Payone has done over 20 live bus shows. Every single one sells out. When Payone speaks, people not only listen, they beg to hear more. Payone accidentally stumbled upon the ultimate shortcut to connection. She is a storyteller. Stories are a communal currency of humanity. Tahir Shah. The Science of Stories. After a lifetime of failed business ideas, toymaker Ty Warner emptied his savings and mortgaged his home, convinced he had an idea worth betting it all on. It was a radical twist on the sweet, fluffy stuffed animal he'd seen a million times. He decided that his stuffed animals would come with a name, a birthday, and a story. There was Pinchers the Lobster, born June 19th, 1993. He came with a story too, and it went like this. "This lobster loves to pinch, eating his food inch by inch, balancing carefully with his tail, moving forward slow as a snail." And there was Chocolate the Moose and Squealer the Pig and Splash the Whale. Finally, Ty Warner created something that flew off the shelves. Kids didn't want just one Beanie Baby. They wanted every single one. At its peak, Beanie Babies pulled in over $700 million in 1 year. Warner understood that we feel connected to someone or something when we hear their story. Stories give us a chance to say, "Me too," activating the similarity attraction effect. Stories create conversation sparks. They give us pleasure when we listen. Stories help bond storytellers to story listeners. Researchers Greg Stevens, Lauren Silbert, and Uri Hassan wanted to know what happens in our brains as we listen to stories. They put participants in fMRI machines and recorded the brain activity of two people, one person sharing a story and one person listening to the story. What they saw was striking. The two brains began to sync up. As the speaker told a story, the listener's brain patterns began to match. Spanish researchers even found that reading words like perfume or coffee lights up our primary olfactory cortex, where we process smell. If you hear a story about a creamy creme brulee, your brain pictures the creme brulee, imagines the taste, and conjures up the sweet smell and smooth feeling on your tongue. Even though you do not have the creme brulee in front of you, your brain responds as if you do. Imagining a sensory experience activates the same part of your brain as the real experience would. And when someone tells you a story, your brain acts as if you were present in the story. Researchers call this neural coupling. I call it connection hacking. This cognitive mechanism makes stories the perfect shortcut to connection. Stories help us literally get on the same wavelength as the people we are with. They not only listen to what we are saying, but also experience what we are saying. Even simple stories rev up brain activity and sync us up with the people around us. The shortest distance between a human being and truth is a story. Anthony DeMello. Story Hacker. Confession. You know those people who call you during dinner and ask for money? I used to be one. I was that person you hung up on. Yes, I used to be a telemarketer. Well, not quite a telemarketer, but close. To make extra money in college, I worked at the Emory Telefund. Every night for 3 years, I called Emory alumni and asked them to donate to their alma mater. This was the worst and best job I ever had. It forced me to get out of my comfort zone, bond with people quickly, and become numb to the word no. Most importantly, it taught me the ultimate connection hack, telling stories. The first few weeks on the job were the hardest. On the first night, you sit down at a large bank of computers and plug your headset into an auto-dial system. As the call connects, you have 5 to 7 seconds to speed read the contact card that pops up on your screen and quickly memorize any relevant details about the caller. I typically aim to recall their name, graduation year, and major. If you were lucky, you got 4 to 5 rings to memorize the data. And then, hello? Hi, Mr. Smith. I'm calling from Emory University Telefund. I would like to ask you about making a donation. Click? A click wasn't as bad as some of the more expletive-filled alternatives. If you managed to keep someone on the line, you had to quickly, and in my case, awkwardly ask for a small donation to the school. In my first 200 calls, I was lucky to keep one, maybe two people on the line. Getting donations from those two people, well, let's just say I wasn't earning my keep. Finally, one night a manager took pity on my abysmal numbers and constant hangups. He came over, unplugged my headset, and said simply, "Do you love Emory?" "Yes, of course. That's why I'm here trying to raise money for us." "Okay, great," he said. "Why do you love Emory?" This was easy. "Well, I love Emory because I think it has some of the best teachers in the country. It has an amazing community, and the campus is beautiful." "Stop," he interrupted me. "That's how I want you to approach these calls. You love Emory. These alumni love Emory. Just tell them stories about that." My manager was right. It didn't matter that these alumni had graduated 50 years ago, or that we had different majors, or that we lived in different areas of the country. We had stories to share. From that point on, I approached my calls with two goals. In the first part of the call, all I wanted to do was share a story about Emory, maybe about homecoming weekend, the new gym, or a fun professor prank on campus. I didn't realize it then, but this first story was aligning the alumni and me. In the second part of the call, my goal was to get them to tell me a story. I wanted to hear about their time at Emory, what had changed, whether they had been back for a visit, or what their favorite moment at the school was. In the end, if they donated, great. If not, that was okay too. My single goal was to hunt for stories. Slowly, as my stories got better, my calls got better too. "Hello? Hi, Mr. Smith. My name is Vanessa, and I'm a sophomore at Emory University. I was wondering if you had a few minutes to reminisce about Emory." "A sophomore, huh? How's our football team doing these days?" "Great, sir. Still undefeated." "Emory doesn't have a football team, so this is a campus-wide inside joke. Actually, this past weekend was homecoming, and we had a giant float made of Georgia peaches. Did you do that for homecoming back in 1978? "Oh, goodness. Let's see. I think we had a parade, but we had water balloons back in those days." "No way. We would get in huge trouble if we had water balloons on campus today. You know how they are about the flower beds." "Yes, I remember how angry the gardeners got when we played soccer on the lawn. Well, what can I help you with, young lady?" "Yes, sir. I'm calling from Emory Telefund. Last year you gave a very generous donation of $100, and I was wondering if you'd be willing to make a donation of $150. I can also mark it especially for the history department, since that was your major." "You can do that? Well, that would be great. And please say hi to Mr. Talbot if he's still there. Not only did the donations start rolling in, but I began to love my job. I learned about hidden nooks in the library. I got tips on how to game the housing lottery system. And I learned so much about my fellow alumni. Every week, I would save stories to tell on my calls and think of new ways to ask for stories. I became a story hunter and a story hacker. And now you can too. Hack number 10, the story stack. Share, tell, and hunt for captivating stories to capture imagination and attention. Many of us instinctively understand the power of stories, but have trouble knowing how to use them in everyday life. I want to give you an easy way to swap, share, and hunt for stories. I call this your story stack. Story stack. Computer programmers use stacks to organize the various components of a software system. For example, my website, scienceofpeople.com, is hosted on WP Engine, runs on WordPress software, and uses Cloudflare as a content delivery network. This is the stack of tools that works together to create my website. The easiest way to harness the power of stories is to have a story stack with your favorite anecdotes, narratives, and follow-up questions all in one place, ready to use. Here's how it works. Trigger topic. You know how the same subjects tend to come up over and over again in conversations? I call these trigger topics. When chatting over drinks or meeting new people, we constantly hear about the weather, traffic, weekend plans, and latest TV shows. These are commonly talked about, safe, generic areas. These are the first level in your story stack. When you hear a trigger topic, you can use it as a launching pad to tell your stories. Take a look at the list below and add any topics that frequently come up in your conversations. Sparking stories. We have stories about everything, but we very rarely stop to take stock of them. Sparking stories are those anecdotes that produce laughter, ahas, groans, and great follow-up conversation. Use the prompts below to hunt for at least one story for each trigger topic. Boomerang. After you are done telling a story, you always want to bring the conversation back around to the other person you are speaking with. They can then answer and send it back to you. I call this throwing a boomerang. At the end of your story, how can you tie the idea back to them? What question can you ask to hunt for their stories? How can you get them talking? Or how can you make them laugh? Let me give you an example of how this works before you begin on your own story stack. Let's say I'm at a business lunch and someone brings up the latest comedy special on HBO. Comedy is one of my trigger topics. I wait to see if there's a lull in conversation and then bring out a story from my stack. It goes something like this. Colleague, I just finished the Aziz Ansari HBO special. So good. Me, yeah, I could spend a whole weekend watching comedy specials on Netflix. I used to watch Bill Maher all the time, but after I humiliated myself in front of him, I could never watch him the same way again. Colleague, what? What do you mean? Me. One time, my husband and I were waiting in a crowded parking lot in West Hollywood after a movie. It was freezing, and the attendant was taking forever to bring us our car. All of a sudden, I see this giant black SUV roll up into the lot, and the attendants wave it right to the front. My husband and I immediately start wondering out loud whose car it might be. We joked that the rims weren't cool enough to be a rapper, and the license wasn't short enough to be a politician. Right as we began to riff on the leather seats, I turned to see Bill Maher standing there giving us death stares. Yes, it was his car, and yes, he heard the whole exchange. It was so awkward. Colleague, oh no, that's so embarrassing. Did he laugh or was he serious? Me. He didn't even crack a smile, so I felt really bad. Anyway, have you ever seen a celebrity in real life? Colleague, oh yeah, this one time? I used a story to bond with my colleague and hack what could have been a predictably boring conversation. Then I threw a boomerang to get him telling me a story. Now it's your turn. Fill out the story stack with as many trigger topics, sparking stories, and boomerangs you can think of. Remember, your stories don't have to be originals. Heard a funny story at work? Add it to your stack. Heard a funny anecdote in this audiobook? Add it to your stack. Trigger topic. Current events. Recent news. A shocking news story. Possible boomerangs. What's one news story you'll never forget? And where were you when you heard it? Where were you when you found out? What sparking story could you use for this trigger topic? Trigger topic. Hometown. Childhood. Growing up. Possible boomerangs. Do you miss your hometown or are glad you escaped? What's a funny memory you have growing up? What sparking story could you use for these trigger topics? Trigger topic: names, forgetting names, interesting names, hard to spell names. Possible boomerangs: what's the history of your family name? What's the most interesting name you have ever heard? Do you like your name? What's a possible sparking story you could use for this trigger topic? Trigger topic: jobs, first job, career choices, dream jobs. Possible boomerangs: what advice would you give a teenager entering into this kind of work? What surprised you most about the job you are in? Did something surprising happen to lead you to what you do now? What sparking story could you use for these trigger topics? Trigger topic: new activities, travel, weekend adventures. Possible boomerangs: what's on your bucket list? Where do you take out-of-town guests when they come to visit you? Tried any new activities recently? Did you love them or hate them? What sparking story could you use for this trigger topic? Trigger topic: holiday, vacations, holiday traditions. Possible boomerangs: where are you going next on vacation? What's the best vacation spot in the world? What's the best or worst vacation you have ever had? What sparking story could you use for this trigger topic? Trigger topic: parties, birthdays, gifts. Possible boomerangs: what's the best party you've ever been to? What's the best gift you ever received? What was the best childhood party you've ever had? What possible sparking stories could you use with this trigger topic? Trigger topics: summer, seasons, outdoors, camp. Possible boomerangs: do you have big plans this summer or from last summer? What does summer remind you of? Did you go to camp? What sparking story could you use with this trigger topic? Trigger topics: weather, storm stories, extreme weather. Possible boomerangs: ever got caught in terrible or unexpected weather? What's the worst sunburn you've ever had? What's your favorite season? Do you have any sparking stories that could go with this trigger topic? Trigger topic: traffic, commuting, driving, road trips. Possible boomerangs: do you listen to audiobooks when you drive? What's your favorite driving playlist or station? What's your favorite podcast? Do you have a long commute? Have you listened to the amazing audiobook called Captivate? Do you have a sparking story that could go with this trigger topic? Trigger topics: TV shows, books, movies, classic books, films, shows, documentaries. Possible boomerangs: what are you reading or watching right now? What was the last thing you read or watched? What's the most interesting documentary, book, or article you've ever seen? What's your favorite character? What actor would play you in a movie? Do you have any sparking stories to go along with this trigger topic? Trigger topic: celebrities, role models, famous stories, fascinating people. Possible boomerangs: have you ever met a celebrity? Have you heard any interesting real-life tidbits about celebrities? If you could meet any celebrity, who would you meet? Do you have a famous role model? Do you have a sparking story that could go with this trigger topic? Trigger topics: events, conferences, music festivals, parades, fairs. Possible boomerangs: have you been to events like this before? What's the craziest event you've ever been to? Do you go to conferences? Do you go to music festivals? Do you have a sparking story that could go with this trigger topic? The art of storytelling. Having a great story stack isn't much good if you're not a great storyteller. Three simple elements differentiate an okay story from an awesome one. First, start with a hook. You have to grab attention from the start. A hook is a provocative question, stimulating statement, or open-ended idea to pique interest. I started my Bill Maher story with the hook: I used to watch Bill Maher all the time, but after I humiliated myself in front of him, I could never watch him the same way again. Invariably, this hook gets people curious. Second, champion a struggle. The best stories have at their center some kind of struggle: a question, a problem to be solved, or a challenge to be overcome. In the Bill Maher story, the struggle was, whose car is it? Or think of it as creating suspense. Can you hint at something? Are you facing off against someone else? Is there a punchline on the way? Last, utilize provocative words. Remember how the brain's olfactory system lights up when it hears the words perfume and coffee? The more descriptive your story, the more your listeners' brains will light up. Spice up your story by adding expressive, interesting words. You can use all three of these elements in under 2 minutes, and you should keep your story short. After 3 minutes, you become a conversation hog. Once you start using this model, it becomes easy to turn a boring anecdote into a laugh-worthy story. The author Susan Cain used this structure to get over 14 million views on her TED Talk on introversion. She used the hook, struggle, and boomerang format to captivate her audience. Hook. When I was 9 years old, I went off to summer camp for the first time, and my mother packed me a suitcase full of books, which to me seemed like a perfectly natural thing to do, because in my family, reading was the primary group activity. Struggle. And this might sound antisocial to you, but for us, it was really just a different way of being social. You have the animal warmth of your family sitting right next to you, but you are also free to go roaming around the adventureland inside your own mind. And I had this idea that camp was going to be just like this, but better. Unique words. I had a vision of 10 girls sitting in a cabin, cozily reading books in their matching nightgowns. But camp was more like a keg party without any alcohol. And on the very first day, our counselor gathered us all together and taught us a cheer that she said we'd be doing every day for the rest of the summer to instill camp spirit. And it went like this. R-O-W-D-I-E, that's the way we spell rowdy. Rowdy, rowdy, let's get rowdy. Boomerang. Yeah, so I couldn't figure out for the life of me why we were supposed to be so rowdy, or why we had to spell this word incorrectly. Cain could have told this same story in a boring way by simply saying, even though many people see reading as antisocial, for me, it was a family activity. When I went to camp, it was incredibly hard to find my place. Instead, she added elements to get people hooked to her struggle, and her boomerang was getting the audience to laugh, which is the best kind of boomerang in front of a large group. Having trouble thinking about how to fit your own stories into this structure? No worries. I've got you covered. I created a fill-in-the-blank game for you to practice. The trigger topic here is commuting. Sound boring? No way. We are going to turn it into a mini-story using the formula above. Just fill in the blanks. Hook. You want to know the most I ever saw while driving? Struggle. I was driving down the road, and all of a sudden, I look over and see blank. Unique words. And it was so blank. Boomerang. Have you ever seen someone do something blank in their car? Let's try this again with the trigger topic, fascinating people. This one can be a bit longer. Think of a person you were very excited to meet. This can be anyone you were excited to meet at any time in your life. Hook. One time, blank years ago, I encountered one of the coolest people I have ever met. Struggle. It might sound blank, but I had always wanted to meet blank because blank. Beforehand, I was so blank. Finally, the moment came. Unique words. And it was blank. What surprised me most about meeting them was blank. I'll never forget blank. Boomerang, who is the coolest person you've ever met? Go through each trigger topic and boomerang and see if you can think of hooks and struggles for each anecdote. Another fun way to hear casual stories in action is by watching sitcoms. This is how I learned to tell short, witty stories. Sitcom writers have to condense character-building stories into funny anecdotes. The TV sitcom How I Met Your Mother has dozens of examples of this. In the pilot, Ted asks Robin, "What do you do?" A trigger topic. And she says, "I'm a reporter for Metro News One." Well, kind of a reporter. That was the hook. "I do those dumb little fluff pieces at the end of the news, you know, like monkey who can play the ukulele. I'm hoping to get some bigger stories soon." That was the struggle. A few minutes later, he asks her about her future plans, a trigger topic. Ted, "Hey, you want to have dinner with me on Saturday night?" Robin, "Oh, I can't. I'm going to Orlando for a week on Friday." Hook, "Some guy is attempting to make the world's biggest pancake." Struggle, "Guess who's covering it?" Boomerang. Notice these mini stories all have a bit of humor in them. Humor often comes from something unexpected or surprising. Don't be shy about testing your jokes on different audiences. Just practice telling your story and see when and where you get laughs and smiles. Use audience feedback to make adjustments to the stories in your stack. Don't be afraid to play around with nonverbal emphases, pauses, and embellishments as you practice telling your stories. Want to add some humor to your stories? We included our article, How to Be Funnier, in your digital bonuses at scienceofpeople.com/toolbox. One of my favorite classrooms for learning the art of storytelling is the New York Times. Award-winning journalists, editors, and writers help make the New York Times a world-renowned news agency, and we can learn from them. One of my researchers, Robbie Smith, and I designed a small experiment to analyze the types of New York Times articles that go viral. Over the course of 4 months from October 2015 to January 2016, Robbie logged and coded all of their most read pieces. He analyzed the topics of each article, the format of the titles, headlines, and the promise of each article. We were particularly interested in the promise of an article. What does the title suggest the article will offer? In other words, if the reader clicks on it, what will it give them? A new outcome? A lesson? A surprise? An update? Here are the categories we used. Question. For instance, the article titled, Can You Get Smarter? From October 2015. How to. Many headlines suggested tips, self-help, or a way of doing something new. What You Can Do About Climate Change was the title of an article from December 2015. History. Other titles referenced a time, period, or moment in history, such as The Hardworking Italian Origins of the Rockefeller Center Christmas Tree from December 2015. Snark. This category included any headline that had a clever, funny, or punny title. We all laughed when we came across, This column is gluten-free. New. For example, Everything You Need to Know About the New SAT came out in October 2015. Story. Well-crafted headlines can imply you're on the brink of reading a great story about a person or place. My Dark California Dream or Lady Gaga and the Life of Passion are two examples. 35% of the articles on the viral list promised a story. 195 out of the 559 total articles, making it by far the most effective category. New came second with 109, Snark third with 84, followed by History, How To, and Question last. Take a look at the most emailed article list on the New York Times website for yourself. You'll see how the same storytelling formula comes up over and over again. First, the writers hook you with the slightest hint of a story in their title. Then, they quickly introduce a struggle or challenge that needs to be solved. And finally, they paint a picture with attention-grabbing words. Whether you want your pitch to go viral, your email to be read, or people to like your status updates, hook people with the power of stories. Reality Bites. You can use your story stack and the three-step storytelling technique in person, in emails, and even in your profiles. Every week, we send out a free Science of People Insights email to over 100,000 subscribers. It's filled with cool people science, human behavior hacks, and communication tips. I once sent out a link to one of our articles called Why Couples Fight. Instead of just plopping the link in the email, I decided to include a short story about my husband and me. It went like this. Subject, the top five issues couples fight about. Darling, will you please pick up your sock? Babe, please pick up your dirty socks. Please pick up your smelly, germy, practically decayed socks. If you were a fly on the wall of my house, you might hear this sequence occasionally. Do you have the same argument with your partner over and over again? You're not alone. Get this crazy fact. According to Dr. John Gottman, 69% of relationship conflicts are never solved. Whoa, whoa, whoa. It'll all be okie-dokie. Let Mama Vanessa fix it. 69% of us fight about the same things over and over again. That's the bad news. But here's the good news. If we know what we fight about and how it happens, we can turn down the heat on our arguments. Find out what your top issues are and how to solve them. Click here. This email had a far higher open rate and click-through rate than average. Why? Yes, I told a story, but I was also being real. I told an honest story about my real husband and something we really fight about. In fact, My husband even texted me that he thought he really did forget to pick up his socks that morning. Comedian Nicole Payone is popular for her bitingly real stories. They're funny, they're heart-wrenching, and most importantly, they connect us to her. I think in some ways, people relate to my stories. Sure, they laugh, but they can also imagine being in that same spot themselves. Maybe they made a similar mistake, says Payone. There is connection through failure. When you hear someone else's failure, you are less judgmental of your own, she added. The best stories are the ones that share both failures and successes. Don't be afraid to share something a little embarrassing, a little vulnerable, a little scary. These are the stories that build the best connection. Challenges. 1. Think of 3 stories that you enjoy telling. 2. Find the hook, struggle, and expressive words to best share them, and then practice them on a friend. 3. Create a note in your phone or on your computer to remember great stories when you hear them. Chapter review. Stories are your shortcut to connection. Stories spark our attention and align the listener's brain patterns with those of the storyteller. Using your story stack is the best way to get someone in line with your way of thinking. Stories light up and sync up our brains. Find stories for common trigger topics that come up in conversation, then use boomerangs to ask people to share their own stories. Not all stories are created equal. Every story should have a hook, a struggle, and vivid words. Fill in the blank. My biggest takeaway in this chapter is... Chapter 11. Empower. How to lead people. You would think Mark Gordon's illustrious career as a film producer is enough for a lifetime. He's won Oscars and Emmys. He's worked with Hollywood's top celebrities, from Tom Hanks to Matt Damon to Sandra Bullock. But he's also a hero, albeit unsung, in the world of education. Gordon first took on increasing responsibilities in the private schools his 2 daughters attended. Then he became chairman for Teach for America Los Angeles. Then, in 2010, Gordon had an idea. And it wasn't a small one. He wanted to create a school that shaped kids into global citizens. This was a tremendous undertaking, especially coming from someone who knew little about schools. Would the leadership skills he developed on movie sets translate into this new setting? When I sat down with Mark Gordon, he summed up his leadership approach in 3 steps. I always start with something I am passionate about, outline 1 goal, and then find a really smart, capable person to work with. The passion was there, and a daunting goal was set. Open a charter school by September 2010. This would give him 9 months to find a location, form an education charter, hire teachers, enroll students, and create a curriculum. The third part of the equation was Christy Dragon. Gordon met Dragon while she was executive director of Teach for America. As a Juris Doctor, former math teacher, and mom of 3, Dragon had the right experience and perspective. I called her and told her, I want to start a school and I'll pay for the whole thing. How do we do it and how do we do it fast? Recalled Gordon. Instead of being overwhelmed, Dragon was hooked immediately. My mom was an immigrant and my dad grew up in the projects outside of Birmingham, Alabama. So diversity and inclusion have always been something that mattered to me, said Dragon. The duo hammered out a mission together. We hoped to create a tuition-free school that was incredibly racially, economically, and intellectually diverse. We also wanted to foster sophisticated thinkers who have a deep sense of service, said Dragon. Within a few weeks, Citizens of the World Charter School was born. But they had just a few months to get the school ready for kids. Eager to shield her from the work of drawing donations or forming committees, Gordon encouraged Dragon to use her talents. I told her to build a team, find her ideal location, and tell me exactly what she needed, said Gordon. Dragon internalized Gordon's philosophy in her own hiring process. Get the right people, connect them to something bigger than themselves, and let them do their thing, said Dragon. She found the right principal, assembled an outstanding teaching team, and located the perfect spot for their flagship location in East Los Angeles. When Citizens of the World Charter School opened up applications for their fall class, they received hundreds of applicants and had a full class starting in September 2010. The reason we were able to do so much so quickly was due to Mark's leadership style. He is very clear on the goal. He knows my skills and he lets me run with them. I couldn't ask for a better partner. He gives me the resources I need to solve problems and the freedom to solve them my way, explained Dragon. Watch the Citizens of the World Charter School video in your digital bonuses at scienceofpeople.com/toolbox. In 2012, Gordon and Dragon opened their second school in the Silver Lake neighborhood in California. Just a year later, they launched their third school in Mar Vista and expanded to Brooklyn, New York, where two schools in Crown Heights and Williamsburg opened. Citizens of the World now has seven schools, serving over 1,850 students across three cities. Slowly, Citizens of the World schools are empowering the next generation of leaders. And Gordon is a testament to the fact that if you are a leader in one area, you are a leader in every area. His approach to people works whether he is influencing the film industry or the education system. Gordon and Dragon are changing the world by empowering people. Now you can too. I've come to believe that knowing where to go is important, but explaining why and how to get there is even more important. Patty Sanchez. The Science of Ownership. Have you ever tried to build something from IKEA? If you're like me, here's what happens. First, you see a great-looking item in a perfectly designed room on the floor of IKEA. You fall in love. You snap a pic of the tag because you'll never remember that bizarre